on today's Compassion Radio.
I've gotten letters from listeners that dropped out halfway through the program. And we're just heartbroken. Like, you got to stop this. You're killing me. Can't you have a happy story? I have to remind them, did you get to the end?
Right.
The last 5 minutes was killer because the joy comes into it and God enters the scene. I mean,
right.
this is a salvation in three acts kind of story.
Yeah, right.
It's not always pretty. It's a messy, sloppy life out there, but God does stuff. So stick with us until you get to that chapter.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio. And indeed, it is so exciting to see what God can do, even amidst times of chaos in our world. Hello, and welcome to this, the last day of February on Compassion Radio, radio for the sake of others. Quick reminder here at the outset, we just want to say thank you so much for your continued prayers and support of this unique Boots on the Ground radio ministry. And we're thrilled to hear from new listeners, as well as our longtime friends and partners. Speaking of friends, we have another new one that we're going to get to know over the course of the next few days, as Bram Floria recently sat down with a gentleman whose work has to do with addressing some serious global problems. And he's going to tell you the story of stepping into someone else's shoes, literally. Here's Bram to get us started today.
On Compassion Radio today, we have a new friend, and I think you're going to like what he has to say. Kent Annan. Welcome to Compassion Radio.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here with you.
Now, you are, as I see from your bio, a new senior fellow at the Wheaton Humanitarian Disaster Institute. Now, as a senior fellow, you're a humanitarian leader and an author and an instructor, and you're addressing some serious global problems. You're now training leaders across the world to do what you've done so effectively over the past 20 or 30 years.
Exactly, and it really does range from a refugee camp in Africa, like outside of Uganda, to studying things in Southeast Asia, to FEMA post-hurricane disaster in South Florida or in Houston in the U.S. So we really are looking at all these areas and the research side, and then out of this research, we're launching this new Master of Arts program in humanitarian and disaster leadership to help train the next generation of folks to respond to humanitarian and disaster crises by doing the very, very best work possible.
The knowledge of the church, especially over centuries, needs to be applied in practical ways in the 21st century. An MBA would be the analog for somebody in business.
Right.
You have the ability, the capability, and the knowledge to operate effectively at an executive level in business. Now, in disaster relief, that goes anywhere from denominational work to parachurch to government work.
Yep. Exactly.
So what is it about the Christian perspective that Wheaton can bring to this that the world is not offering in this kind of education through secular universities?
I just think as Christians, we want to be professionals and working at the very best professional level like people in these fields do who in secular organizations. But I think what's added and what we need to bring as followers of Jesus is, well, how do we think Christianly about this? And then how does that change how we approach the whole person? So I think to approach someone with their spiritual needs in mind, even post-disaster, and how do we help people think through in humanitarian crises how to deal with trauma and how to get out there with the very best psychology involved, but also with the kind of spiritual Christian side. So I think what we bring that's different is integrating these different elements of the best professional approach, but also with a deeply Christian approach too.
I think about some of the great books that we've even offered as premiums for the past few years have been very practical in applying your faith in ways that really affect maximum change.
Yep.
And our listeners have appreciated that kind of ethic in our reporting because we want to bring people that are thought leaders, that are writing well. I appreciate about your position and your person that, Kent, you are the kind of guy that arrived at this by practical experience.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just an ivory tower academic. You are somebody who was in the trenches, and because of that, you couldn't not write about it.
Right.
And as a result, people like University Press noticed you, and you found that partnership in publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, you have a certain kind of credibility that comes from being a published author, mm-hmm. which you have to capitalize on as your platform.
Right.
Much in the same way that radio is our platform. I inherited this chair from guys that have much more prestigious careers than I have, but they trusted me somehow to carry on this legacy that Compassion Radio is.
Yep.
I'm grateful for that. I'm humbled by it.
Mm-hmm.
just to have the privilege every day to talk to people who are listening to you right now, Kent. These are my people. It's my tribe. And I'm so proud of them because they've given so generously to projects. They've sustained the whole idea of going out there and finding God's stories at the far corners of the globe. Right. And you were in the business of finding opportunities for people to go serve and to learn as they serve. Yeah. And that the real leaders are the ones that God has already placed there on the field, close to the action, close to where the suffering is.
Yeah. What you say is exactly right. Maybe you play a similar role. I get to be a bridge. And I sort of think of the leaders are on two sides. One side of the leaders are the leaders like I work with in Haiti, or I was just in the past year working on a new book, and I was in a refugee camp in Uganda, and I was in homes of refugees in Jordan. Those are the leaders. How do we support them to lead their communities and their lives through survival and being faithful and even finding a way to thrive in such hard circumstances? That's one side. I get to be this bridge. But I think the other leaders are like your listeners. They're working hard jobs. They're doing this, and to be generous with their prayers, you who are listening, generous with your giving, with at the end of a hard work day and taking your kids around, to still care about other people in other places. So I think these leaders in two places, what Compassion Radio does and what we get to do in humanitarian work is sort of bridge these two amazing groups of people so that love can go back and forth and that we all become better as part of God's kingdom together.
The greatest of these is love.
Exactly.
Now, this is also an ethic, as Rabbi Zacharias would talk about. This a system. We actually build into our lives habits, priorities, virtues that, in effect, love on creation the way God intends to love through our hands and our words, our hugs, and through our pocketbook sometimes. We actually step out and say, whatever's in here is yours, Lord. Help your people. That's an awesome privilege, but it's scary at times for people like me to sit down and say, we need to go help that refugee camp.
Right.
We need to send money to these people who are taking the Bible into places where it's never gone before. Mm-hmm. And to trust that God's going to take care of our needs as an organization to bring that story.
Right.
But we do. We do trust God to do these things as much as you trust God to bring you the right kinds of people. Because without people to teach in your institute, without God-ordained divine appointments, people that are called to you, you've got nothing to do.
Right, exactly.
You are there to share and to help enable the next generation of leaders who are servants.
Mm-hmm. No, it's exactly. At each of these stages, we just serve people, and God's got to bring people into it, whether it's listeners or givers or students, and our continual searches to find the right people to serve in the most faithful ways possible.
I want to talk about some of the people out there at the end of the line that we get to serve with. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, give me a story about a student or somebody that's come to you that you were not expecting that's been your treasure.
One colleague I've got to work with, his name is Jonathan. He had graduated from college and then worked for a couple of years, but they came and worked with a nonprofit I had founded. It was amazing to me, and that's part of what we'll be doing at Wheaton, is trying to serve people like this. But he came super smart and dedicated in some experience. But then to see someone like that grow in not just knowledge, but in love for the people we are serving in Haiti, and then to see him just grow as a leader and keep thriving, and in a way, I think that the calling of the Christian life can be to keep getting better at what you're doing while keep becoming humbler, growing in competency and growing in humility. And both those can make us better at serving other people.
Is there a way to get to humility, the humbleness of heart that is at the center of the Beatitudes? Mm-hmm. Is there a way to get there without having to be crushed?
Yeah.
That's my question, because so many people are asking us about how to get involved in things. Yeah. And I almost kind of dread responding sometimes. I realize that people that I have admired the most, they've suffered the most.
Yeah.
They've gone through things I don't even want to discuss on the radio sometimes.
Right.
But God has used that to his glory. It's a tough road sometimes.
Yeah.
But is there a way to get to that kind of humility where there's just a sweet spirit there that you know God's going to use that person without having to go through suffering? Is it possible?
That's a great question. I don't know. I would be reluctant to answer that just because we know with God's calling that the cross is often involved. And so I think it's an individual by individual case. So I don't know how much each person's call is going to involve suffering or not. I will say when we get involved in humanitarian work, helping people who are suffering, if it's in the U.S. or in other countries, I have thought a lot about this. And I do think our hearts are going to be broken and lament, which goes through the Psalms and really throughout scriptures and the Psalms, you know, maybe most of all, lament will be part of our lives. And I think if we're going to do this work well, lament is going to be part of it.
Define for us how lament is different than sorrow.
I think it's this crying out, like the psalmist cries out, how long, O Lord, how long? And I know for me, sometimes I want to guard my heart from lament because it's almost too much to bring in. So I know I've gone through phases in my life where I want to keep that lament of crying out in longing to God.
Yeah.
that includes sorrow, but I think there's also a longing for change. And so to have that faith combined with anger sometimes and sorrow, I think in lament that we see in the psalm, you know, what I've found in my life, I don't know if it's like this for you, when I cut off lament from my life, I also end up cutting myself off from joy.
Yeah, you end up at that dull midline.
The dull midline. That's why I appreciate Compassion Radio. It's like telling these stories and saying, and let's listen to stories that break our hearts, but also that take us to meaning and to joy. And I think if we care about loving people and opening ourselves to people in hard circumstances, there's going to be a way to lament, but it's going to take us to deeper joy too.
I've gotten letters from listeners that dropped out halfway through the program. And we're just heartbroken. Like, you got to stop this. You're killing me.
Yeah.
Can't you have a happy story? I have to remind them, did you get to the end?
Right.
The last 5 minutes was killer because the joy comes into it and God enters the scene. I mean,
right.
this is a salvation in three acts kind of story.
Yeah, right.
It's not always pretty. It's a messy, sloppy life out there, but God does stuff. So stick with us until you get to that chapter.
Oh, that is such a good point, Bram. Friends, do stick with us for the entire story. Please don't bail on us early. We'll get right back to this terrific interview in just a moment. But first, this word from Cher Nelson.
Hello, friends. This is Cher Nelson. For those of you who are listening, I'm just so grateful that you're here. Because our message hasn't changed, our hearts haven't changed, our purpose hasn't changed, and our partnership with you hasn't changed. We all have been overwhelmed with stories of desperation and need. There are so many things happening, and I have to tell you that we need your hearts of compassion today, too. Although I want you to reach out in tangible ways to people around you, I need to tell you that we need your help financially, too. Please know that we know the economy is difficult for many people. But we don't want to lose our voice bringing you the stories of what's happening around the world. We don't want to lose our opportunity to bring Christians to you that need your love and support and your prayer. Please love us. And please, if you haven't, join our vision team. God bless you.
Join us as we bring the compassion of Jesus this month to the neediest places on earth. Just give us a call, 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Again, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're on the internet at CompassionRadio.com. Friends, we don't go unless you go with us. So give us a call today. And now, back to Bram and his guest, Kent Annan.
Honestly, the best, most fun parties I've ever been to are in Haiti with neighbors who were literally on the edge. They send their kids to school, or maybe they could send one or two kids to school and not the other some years, and on that edge of survival. But then say it's time for First Communion, or there's a baptism or a marriage, and just the joy that came in the midst of that. I think obviously they're not pretending life isn't hard, so they're listening through the end of the story, like they're living that story, but they also get a taste of that joy, the final act.
And not just a taste, it's like a fire hose coming at you.
right.
And we've both been to the edge of the planet there where we've seen these things happen, and we're mystified at times because we don't understand the cultural context so much, but we're looking for all the cues that we can recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand anger, we understand just the visceral things, the emotional language still exists.
Yeah.
So no matter what language they're speaking, we understand the nonverbal communication of turning away, leaning in, embracing, pushing away.
Yeah, singing, dancing, like some of these things that translate.
And our heart longs for those things when we see them. We want to cry like they cry.
Yep.
We want to leap like they leap.
Right.
We want to dance like they dance. We want to celebrate. We want to taste life.
Yeah.
It's at these places of extremes where it seems like people often really live.
Right.
We understand why there's adrenaline junkies out there in the world.
Yeah.
Because they've lived a moment.
Right.
They want to relive that moment many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of what it's like to be in the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be incredible moments.
Right.
And a lot of hard work in between.
Yeah.
but you live for those moments.
Yeah. You and I both experienced this in places around the world. And then I think like after Houston in the hurricane, right? Yeah. Like you see total heartbreak, people losing everything they've worked for. And then you also see people of like different ethnicities and race and economic factors, all that, like sort of reaching out and helping each other through the water, or rescuing an old person who is stranded in their home because they're just going out neighbor to neighbor to do it. And that's this other glimpse, like right in our country, of these extremes, but also I think this taste of love in God's kingdom.
And those are laser-focused stories, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we can get across in these mediums.
Yep.
When you stand on stage and you slip into slippers that you traded your shoes for with somebody in a refugee camp,
yeah.
When you walk around, the miles you've walked in those shoes have been in front of people on a stage.
Yeah.
You haven't gone across the country, I don't think, doing a whole hike. But
right.
There's something about theater
right.
of entering into somebody else's experience that you quite literally do with that
yeah.
and that item. It's not a prop.
Right.
It's a treasured possession for you.
Yeah.
You step into someone else's shoes. Mm. So just give me that one little story for our listeners right now. What was it like for you to encounter an opportunity to be literally in someone else's shoes?
I was with, and this is in my new book, You Welcome Me, that comes out in the fall. I was in camp and went to two different refugee camp settlements in northern Uganda, and one was in this camp Bidi Bidi, where I think you...
Yes, we've been there.
Where you've been as well. And met this guy and was talking with him. We'd met a couple other people and we were going to meet more, but I just started talking with him, and he used to be a dentist in South Sudan. You know, a million people from South Sudan in the last year and a half left South Sudan because of the violence to come into northern Uganda.
Now, during the time you were exploring in Uganda and South Sudan, I know that there were two full waves of war victim immigration.
Yeah.
They're both massive. You know, South Sudan was a brand new country then. It was almost immediately being torn apart by a raging civil war.
Right.
And we know it still continues. As I found out, there were very few men who made it out alive.
Yeah, yeah.
Most had fallen or had remained behind to defend what was left of homes and property.
Right.
And those who crossed the border into Uganda were overwhelmingly women,
yep.
small children, unaccompanied minors,
yep.
and a few old men. Hundreds of thousands of them.
Yep. Yep.
And very, very few young men.
Yeah.
Very few.
Right.
It's still unnerving to me when you see such a massive humanity that's so obviously
yep.
missing so many of one class of people. It's like what it must have been at the end of World War I in Western Europe,
yep.
or maybe Cambodia after the Khmer Rouge.
Right.
So the man you speak of is a true anomaly.
Yep.
For some reason, he felt compelled to make this journey, and it's a real miracle of decency that he's taken in so many kids.
Yeah, and then he's there, and we start talking to him, and he says he's a dentist. And I'm like, oh, and you know, now he's on this little 30 by 30 foot plot of land. He's got a couple chickens over in the other corner. He's growing a few vegetables. He learned how to make bricks out of the sort of red clay dirt there, and he built a tiny brick home. And talked to them some more, and then he shows me his hands, these dentist hands that were now as rough as any laborer I've ever seen. He mentions he's HIV positive, and he has to go to the clinic to get meds every day. And does none of this looking for sympathy. Like he's just sharing the story. He's actually pretty funny. He's got me and one other American I was with, and the Ugandans laughing, and he's talked about farming, and he liked the first crops, like the cows ate the crops, he had to go to something else. And he's just being funny in these crazy circumstances. And I'm already blown away by him. It's hard not to reflect on how would I handle this circumstance. And then he says, oh yeah, and I also am taking care of my three kids. I'm taking care of three orphans as well. He had never met these orphans before he was a refugee himself. They weren't from his tribe. They were each from a different tribe, three
and
different tribes.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah, a big deal.
I ran
deal.
Across a number of groups of women who had ended up adopting. I had to learn how to ask carefully which ones were their native-born children and which ones had been born to them by God.
Yeah.
And it was a hard way to go about asking that question because it would always answer, they're my children.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, he'd really taken it as his calling to provide home. He lost his home and to provide home for them. And so he was doing his little farming there on the plot. And then he said he was going back in the brush and he had talked with some Ugandan locals who were letting him farm, you know, some kind of, like, it was just their land, but they weren't using it for farming. And he just mentioned as an aside that it was hard work. You could see on his hands. He said, oh, and these, it's kind of hard getting through the brush in my flip-flops. You know, look down and he's kind of broken down black plastic flip-flops. I've done this kind of work for lots of the last 25 years, and I this is sort of an amateur move, you know, that you shouldn't do, but I just...
You never step in where you can't get out of.
Yeah, that you can't get out of, and you don't want to kind of call things out, but I just, for whatever reason, I was just looking down, and I had these black dress casual shoes. They had a really nice sole. They were good shoes. Like, I wore them on those things because they look good, but they're also super comfortable.
The kind you can
traveling.
Go see the prime minister in, but can still trek but through
you can
B2B.
Do full, yeah, you can do full, you can do, and you can do a full day of traveling, you know, and then... You know, whatever, it just blurted out of my mouth, and I said, hey, do you want to trade shoes? And he looked down and he was assessing. He said, well, let me try, which I really respected because I was offering charity. He wasn't just going to take it. Like, this is a guy on the edge of survival with kids.
But it was also a transaction of honor.
Yeah.
And saying, I'd like to trade you for something means
right.
I admire something of yours. Would you consider? You give them
right.
the power.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you compare. You try to find a win-win.
Yeah, and I wasn't just giving him to him. I was going to ask him if he wanted to trade. And he says, let me try him on. So I kind of leaned on his shoulder, untied it. He tried one on, then he tried the other one on, and, you know, had his flip-flops on there in the clay. And he said, yeah, you know what? I think these would be really good. Are you sure you want to do this? I said, oh, yeah, it would be my honor to do it. And then he said, you know, I really long for home. I want to go home. But, you know, God led. God was still faithful. The Israelites, like, they were in the desert for a long time, but God led them home. Mm. I want to go home, but my work is here right now. And I just so respected that. You know, he had the lament there in what he was saying, like that longing for home, but he also had hope. And then he also had this commitment to serving right there, these kids, especially, who he was caring for. So I just felt honored to have that exchange with him. And then as I walked away, his kids and other kids were giggling at me as mm-hmm. I walked away.
Trying to stuff your American-sized feet into his little slippers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm grateful to have those. And I think he got the better farming shoes, but I know I got the better end of the deal because I get to stay connected with him in that way.
No doubt. Now, this connected us to the reality of his existence. Mm. To see somebody's artifact is to see a piece of them and how they lived at the time they lived in.
Yeah.
I think about the power going through, as I did 30 years ago, through Auschwitz, mm-hmm. and just seeing, you would call it the debris of humanity.
Right.
Just the things that the Nazis collected from the Jews that were on display as a shame, but also as a testament to the lives that were lost, but not just lost, but lives that were lived. Mm. And we're in the process now of bringing people into a sense of community with people who are living and are living through things that are extraordinary, both good and bad. And we're bringing the kingdom of God closer together by doing this. And you and I both know that the Western Church needs desperately, for their own sake, for their own sanctification, to experience what God's doing through and in his people in other places.
Yep.
We know how desperate we are for this, whether we know we need the medicine or not, having been out there ourselves. So we're trying to bring that day by day, and you do this on a podium after podium as you bring people into this awareness and this compassion, this ethic of empathy.
Yeah. And then, like you just said, well, like an ethic of exchange. So we're not just giving, that we're receiving, and that we both need each other.
And I thought about that. When I saw you step into those slippers yesterday, I thought, you got the better end of the deal because you have a much better story now for it.
Yeah, for sure. No.
And the stories we hold are really the treasure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can keep shaping us.
We're both here at the Faith and International Development Conference at Calvin College to help encourage people to get their story in gear. Because what they have to share is their story. How God and why God is bringing them to the point of willingness to serve is something important, because when you walk across the threshold into somebody's family, mm-hmm. they will often demand of you, who are your people? Where do you come from? Tell us your story. Mm-hmm. And that is the very first thing that establishes relationship. Without the story, there's nothing.
Yeah. We so quickly jump to maybe, what do you do for a living or something here? But in a lot of other places, which I love, you better be talking about your kids and your family and your parents and all that before you're allowed to go anywhere else. The story of your family and who you come from and who you are. And if you have kids, who's coming behind you?
I want to talk more about those kind of stories in our next program, but we got to wrap it up right here. Kent Annan, a senior fellow at the new Humanitarian Disaster Institute at Wheaton College in Chicago, Illinois. Thanks for being with us on Compassion Radio.
Thank you. Love being with you. Thanks for what you do.
Friends, here at Compassion Radio, we certainly do thank the Lord for you, especially those who support this ministry have again proven themselves faithful. It's a wonderful thing. For it's not only an act of faith in supporting this ministry, but we here live by faith. Here's one last important word from Bram Floria.
In just a few more days, we'll begin our 75th year of ministry, which, when you think of it, is an astounding achievement in broadcasting. It's also a testament to the generations of faithful partnership that has truly changed the world. In the days and weeks ahead, we'll be sharing some incredible new projects and initiatives that are going to have a profound and lasting effect on the body of Christ around the world. What is in the works is going to seriously amaze some of our most loyal supporters and inspire a whole new level of compassionate action and ministry. All of these things are directly related to the faithful support of partners, and that means you. Would you consider a special anniversary gift to the Lord for the work of Compassion Radio this month, even today?
We have a truly unique mandate. You know this. To connect you with the work and witness of the worldwide kingdom of God. We bring you kingdom news that can transform your life, but we can only get those stories and bring them to you if you send us. Thank you for remembering us today with your special gifts and offerings. They are essential to our current work and to the future of Compassion Radio. Please give as generously as you can, and please do it today. And I can say with confidence of years witnessing this myself, God is truly pleased when we reach out and reach deep. God bless you, friends.
For your gift this month, we'd love to send you the first part of a new companion study to an upcoming series on the book of Ecclesiastes. It's available in PDF format by email or printed and mailed. The full study will be available this spring. Ask for your Section 1 today by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail. Contact us at Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And, of course, you can find us online safe and secure at CompassionRadio.com. I'm Jim Governale. On behalf of Bram, Cher, and the entire Compassion Radio team, have a wonderful day in the Lord. And we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.